Welcome to the MEP podcast, where I'll be exploring the intersection of sport and spirituality through a variety of practices that ultimately invite us to learn, grow, and connect. I believe that through movement and mindfulness, we can create an awareness within that will allow us to integrate as individuals and connect more deeply to our mind, body, and spirit, together navigating a way to the way.
On this episode, I sit down with Sam Parsons, professional runner and founder of Tin Man Elite, running for Adidas, and we speak about his aspirations for the year ahead, qualifying for the Olympics, his mindset, overcoming some big challenges from last year, and how he can return to enjoying each moment and each day of his training as he moves forward into the final stages of his career, in his words. It's great to talk to him as well about the whole creative process of starting Tin Man Elite, the vision, you know, collaborating with brands and designing some products and seeing them in the wild, seeing them out in the world, and how they've been able to bring people together, get people excited, get people running, moving, and ultimately changing people's lives, which can sound hyperbolic for a sweatshirt, but it's actually what can happen. So I hope you enjoy this one. Thanks. All right, Sam, good to connect with you. It's been a couple of years since we were text messaging and lots has changed on my side. And it seems like you've been running faster on your side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been, everything, you know, I said early on, like in my career, that anything after, you know, like breaking four and, you know, getting a few of those like big milestone marks that like kind of like are look good on paper and look good on a resume. Was just going to be cherry on top, you know, like it was just going to be frosting. And obviously when you get caught up in the moment and it's always like on to the next thing mentality, it doesn't feel like that anymore. Like, It's like, now I feel like I have everything to prove all over again. Even though if you would have asked me, you know, 2 years ago or asked the high school self or the college self, like, would you take this? I would have taken it every single time. But now I'm at the point now where nothing that I did before to me right now matters. And that's kind of like the competitive spirit and mindset I have. So
yeah,
I've kind of like forgotten everything I've done in the past in order to continue like building and never like settle and become complacent with where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, that sounds cool. Well, I think then let's start off with kind of like, you know, it's early mid January, 2024, year's just kicked off. You are, you know, prepared or preparing for a big year ahead, and you're one of the, you know, main members of Tin Man Elite and creative director. So maybe we can just have kind of a general like summary of like, where are you right now? What's going on? What's your focus?
I guess I'll attack this question. The way I try to like approach a lot of things, it's like addressing like the physical, emotional, and mental side of things. Physically, I'm in a good spot. I've ran now 3 to 4 weeks at about the mileage that I feel like is sustainable for me. Sustainable, and when I say sustainable, I mean, what can I do without breaking? Like, how much can I do without breaking? And that's right at like 90 miles for me. And I feel like I could get greedy and do 100 one week, but I think 1 week of training means nothing unless you can do the same week again the next, and then do it again after that, and again, and again, and again. And I feel like that's with anything in life. It's like, it's great if you can do it once. It's even better if you can do it twice and three times. Emotionally, I feel like I'm in a great spot in terms of having new teammates and having new life injected into the brand. I call it a brand sometimes, but professional running team first, brand second. I do work on the brand side, so I try not to get too caught up in calling it a brand, even though that's kind of the approach that I need to take in my role on the team. I definitely have a lot of things that I still need to address within myself in order to be my best this year. Specifically meaning like I do know that I need to seek like help outside of my own self practice with like sports therapists, maybe even just a normal therapist. Also, like I definitely have some demons and things that I need to address from my past, like I fell at the World Championships this year, in the prelim, like was very confident I was going to make the final 600 meters to go. Just clipped a Kenyan's foot, fell straight on my face, and after pushing so hard for one thing and one dream and one goal, and then to quite literally fall on your face, not metaphorically speaking, but figuratively speaking, can be in front of, I don't know how many people were watching, but I know it was people from all around the world, and that is a humbling thing to go through, whether you're running for your conference meet with your parents watching, and you lose to your rival high school, or it's, in your country's singlet, it doesn't matter. It just matters what it means and what it felt like to you. So that's something I still need to, I think I need to address better. And then the last Olympic cycle I went through, at the trials, I tore my calf muscle in the trials with also like a lap to go. And I didn't finish the race, and I was in second, and we were clear of the field. Like, I had this game plan with my other competitor that we were going to basically, we knew we were the two strongest in the race, and we were going to break the field open, and take turns, like taking laps and pushing the pace and just breaking our competition. And we did that up until it broke me in the process also. And that was also like traumatizing in its own sense, where all of a sudden your Olympic dream is right in front of you, and then your body physically can't go anymore. So I do have a lot of like cobwebs in my closet. Demons are probably an extreme way to say it, like I'm not battling a drug addiction or something like that, but there's certainly things that I need to, I think, speak about. And that's why I'm willing to be vulnerable in these podcasts here, because I know everyone deals with their own things, and I don't want to make it seem like it is all sunshine and rainbows just because I'm running 90-mile weeks. It's like, look, there's nights and there's days and there's moments where I catch myself with my teeth clenching. You know what I mean? And I'm sitting there thinking, like, am I doing enough? Am I working hard enough? Because at the end of the day, like, I am nothing short of obsessed with what I'm doing currently and like the pursuit that I'm in. And that can be a scary thing. And when you're obsessed with anything in life, that can also lead to some very dark moments and dark things. So emotionally, some things I need to address, but luckily, I'm in sunny LA right now, training in great weather. So I'm enjoying that. Much to my teammates' dismay, in negative degree temperatures in Boulder. This is my little training camp. And then yeah, I think mentally, I think emotionally, mentally, I feel like that covered enough. I've talked enough.
For now, we're just getting started.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm curious, like, saying that the sort of like demons in the closet, obviously you are being explicitly vulnerable about putting this out there and sharing that, which I definitely appreciate the courage. And that's a huge step in and of itself. And I guess I'm curious, like, how do those experiences like show up now? Is it when you get to the point where you're like pushing at that upper limit, is there a thought that comes in like, oh no, my calf, or feel more hesitation around like getting too close to somebody else and tripping? Or is it in the quiet still of before falling asleep that those fears kind of pop up?
Yeah, I would say it's in the quiet spaces, or when it's the worst. It's like it's when you're forced to be quiet is when it can be the loudest. And I think that's why a lot of people struggle, and like myself included, like with meditation practice, is because of that. Is because like it when you are dealing with things that you know you need to address, it can be so hard to just find solace in your breath and within your breathing. So that is the biggest thing I'd say for sure. And then as far as I think they depict it really well in like a few movies that I've seen. And I luckily got the same advice where it's like after a crash, or after a failure, you need to throw yourself right back into the sharks, like, and remind yourself that you still are a shark yourself. And that's something that I did right away, was like I told myself, like, you need to like lace your spikes back up and get right back on a starting line. And I didn't allow myself to even fall into a space of like, can I get back and do it again? Like, can I get that close to someone again without having fear? You know, I think that if I would have taken the time off, which probably like I just addressed, like mentally, physically, emotionally, like that's the only thing I should have done, you know, for my own well-being, was to just stop. But professional athletics at, in any capacity, can be an incredibly toxic experience, where it's your job, you know, like you don't have an option whether it's the right thing for your body. You know, it's not like you can just sign up for the next one in the next 6 months, or sign up for the next major marathon coming up, or it's, you know, it's like, no, it's like if you don't make this bonus, like you're not making enough money this year. Or it's there's tons of different factors, but I knew that I knew that I had to keep pushing in order to keep an edge going into this year. If I would have kept my last race of 2023 being that quote unquote failure of falling in that race, and then letting that be something that I not only live with, but it's almost let it become a part of my psyche, then all of a sudden, yeah, I didn't want that to bleed into my Olympic year experience. And it will in training, like naturally, like those fears are always there. Like once anybody goes through any injury, in any capacity, whether it's like a skiing accident, the next time you're going to hit the slopes, like you're going to be scared. You're not going to hit that turn the same way. You're not going to do that same thing. If you're a football player, you're not going to hit that same route the same way because you're scared the linebacker coming, you know, through the middle, you know, or same thing. If you're the linebacker and you got a concussion, you're not going to hit that hole to hit the running back like quite as hard, maybe, you know. So yes, for sure. Like I'm a veteran now in this space. Like I'm on my second professional contract now with Adidas, and that is what I personally consider a veteran in the sport. Is if you're on your second contract, and I think that's pretty common with most professional sports that they consider veterans that. And you just have to be more savvy with things, is understanding like, hey, I don't need to do those same sprints today. Or hey, I need to do a 20-minute warm-up today and things like that. It's just getting smarter in order to continue to do everything you have to do.
Well, I think even that sort of like getting back on the horse thing, like I recently watched Dave Chappelle's like special on Netflix, and he talked about when he got like attacked on stage. He was like, I gotta get back on stage the next night, you know? And I've heard that story as well time and time again, where it's
It's
like
fucked up, isn't it? It's
it's
like
it
fucked
is
up. Like
kind of
any
crazy.
person, like it's like, dude, take time and just relax and like let yourself process it. But like fucked up that the best thing probably is just to throw yourself back in the deep end and see if you can still swim.
There's probably some combination there of like you don't want to just sit at home and think about it. You need like proper support to process it as well. I think 'cause a lot of people probably don't think about that. It's just like they're just going to deny it, you know, and then be afraid and just like let that fester, and that's going to be detrimental. But
I mean, pushing things down is the is like with social media and everything we have today, it's like the easiest thing to do, right? Is like not address. It's like not addressing things is very easy today, you know.
There's more than enough distractions out there to pick and choose from. So, yeah, I guess like going into this year and kind of like following you along on social media and stuff last year, like it feels like as you're a veteran now, it feels like you're on a good trajectory, like your performances have been good. And so, you know, how do you balance this like obsessive progression and evolution with the sort of enjoying of the journey each day and each step? But, you know, there are objective landmarks and goals that you really have set out for it.
I think that's the scary part, Ryan, is that I do catch myself not enjoying it. Is like I catch myself all of a sudden being like, I'm so obsessed with these goals and these dreams that I've written down in stone, like in my journals and on my mirrors and, you know, things like that, that I'll catch myself missing the small moments. And I have lost touch with my mindfulness practice because of my goals. And I can, and if we were to do this interview, even a year ago, I probably would have been able to like easily like lie to myself, and on this podcast about that, and been able to be like, no, like I'm still mindful, like I'm still like, you know, like hearing the birds, you know, in the dark moments, or like in like a tough workout, like I can still like separate the two, you know, I can still do those things because of my practice. And that's something where I think that routine in running is so important, and it's so important in order. I mean, circadian rhythm, they've done so many studies on circadian rhythm and how that can be one of the biggest like performance enhancers over anything, over altitude training, over whatever supplement company is, you know, like saying this is gonna raise your VO2 or whatever, you know, like it's like circadian rhythm and doing something the same time every single day and like keeping your body in that same rhythm in order for it to like learn when it needs to perform and when it needs to be successful is so important. And along with that, it's easy to then let that consume you and stop enjoying the small moments like you were just talking about and just be driven by the what's next. What can I do more? Well, he's doing this or she's doing that, and I want to do that now. And through those failures on paper that I've had, I think is when you start to like peel things back. And I can really, with this past experience, like I was so obsessed with qualifying for the World Championships this past year in Budapest. Even though the chips were so stacked up against me this spring, coming off of an injury, getting a late start, even after having a great indoor season, I was running well, but I was on the outside looking in, you know, like I wasn't a lock. Like I had to work for the points, I had to work to qualify. Like, and I completely lost like focus of the enjoyment of that was a great workout. You know what I mean? Just because I'm like, fuck, will that be enough for this race coming up? Because I'm just constantly thinking, what's coming? What's coming? What do I need to do? What do I need to do next? You know? And then when you look back at all that, you're like, man, I was actually miserable, you know? And that's something where I've been able to now reflect on that and give myself the space to reflect and say, if I'm going to be successful this year, I cannot let myself fall into that trap again, where all I'm thinking about is Paris. How do I get there? Am I working hard enough? You know, it's like, dude, like go out for a run and just enjoy the conversation with your friends, you know? And like, luckily, like, with Tin Man Elite right now, like we have brought in all these young 23, 24-year-olds right out of college that remind me of that young pro that I was too, that was going out after races and drinking too many beers and, you know, talking to too many people and being an idiot, you know, but I was enjoying myself and I was celebrating everything, you know, and there's a lot of beauty in that, being able to like really celebrate your work that you're putting in. So I think that has been a huge help for me, for sure. I know it's something where it's like, if I'm not able to enjoy myself and enjoy the process of it this year, I'm not only going to not be successful when the time comes to actually qualify, but I'm also going to look back at being maybe having an Olympic title next to my name, and it'll be hollow, it'll be empty. You know, maybe I'll have an Olympic rings on my body, but you know, they might as well be not there, you know, because the process and the experience of getting there was so toxic and meaningless work ethic. You know, it's like I feel like a lot of people love to latch on to like the David Goggins, like how hard can you work, you know, thing. And it's like, man, like I don't care if you ran a 100-mile race, you know, like, but if you didn't like, if there wasn't a moment in that training or in the race or anything where you found some sort of peace or happiness, you know, it's like fucking meaningless, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I'm curious, like, even in a bit of retrospect, can you look at, like, oh, this kind of like block of training I was really enjoying each day, and this block I wasn't, and notice any sort of like performance outcome, influenced by those different sort of like just attitudes and
Yeah,
orientation?
Yeah, I think that I guess just like to give a clear-cut example, I can give a few. When after I had qualified for world champion, after I had qualified for world championships, I went to St. Moritz in Switzerland for, 2.5 weeks for my build up. And it was the best training I had the whole year. Because I was free, I was free from the expectation of I need to qualify, I need to do enough. At that point, it was like, how can I do everything the right way? And my body was happy. It was in sync, like I was listening to it. I wasn't pushing it maybe a day too early. And that can be all the difference in the world between just giving yourself an extra day of rest or not. When even in my buildup for my indoor season before I ran 13:12 in the 5K and set all my personal bests that indoor season and was sixth at European indoors. That buildup was over Christmas time. I was jumping around place to place. I was spending time with family. I was getting the work done and I was working my ass off. But I was still enjoying all the like little moments in between. It wasn't like I was like going for my run, putting myself in an esophagus, like 4 hours and then going out for my double and lift later that day, I was doing all like the fun little enjoyment of life. And all of a sudden I realized I was like, whoa, I'm really fit right now, And I think part of it was because I wasn't hyper obsessed over like how great it I needed to be. It was just like enjoying it. So that's definitely a huge part of it. Absolutely. It's finding the middle ground between being meticulous, and having that obsession, that edge that you'll need on race day, but not letting it consume you to the point where you can't function when it comes time to really let it rip.
It's funny, like you mentioned the new runners and the in the on the team and that energy. There's like a naivety almost to
Totally.
that, right? It's funny how, like, as we get older and we have more experience and hopefully more wisdom, we can still kind of we get more narrow-minded and like lose track of some of these incredibly valuable things like quite easily. And it's funny, but it's great that you have like reminders around you. And I'm curious, just like the team environment itself versus somebody who's just like training on your own, like, is that something that you've just always had from school and then being on this team and being a part of that? Or like there must be other guys out there that are a
Yeah,
little bit more
absolutely.
isolated.
There's some lone wolves out there for sure, and that's what like keeps them going. Like that's their edge, is they're doing it by themselves. Like the once a runner mentality, if you will. Where I'm just so far from that. I'm such a social runner. And this could go back to mindfulness practice, being as weak as maybe it's ever been. Is because running by yourself is a meditative act. It's like you are quite literally alone with your breath if you decide to not run with your headphones, maybe, and drown yourself with a podcast or Taylor Swift album or whatever. But I think that I have found that whenever I'm in a environment, whether it's with a team, I want to rise to the top. I want to be one of the best in that setting. I want to see who is doing what and who's working so hard and who's doing what to get to the best, and I want to top them, and there's this competitive spirit that I love. I love seeing someone that is having a great day at a workout, or if I see one of my teammates, doing something or eating better than me or whatever it is, like there's that little bit of competitive, like friendly competitive spirit, that I think goes such a long way. And I think that's where the best teams are built, is where it's like but it's healthy, it's not like a I hate them, I can't believe they're doing that type of like energy. It's like a yo, come on, let's go do this, let's do it together type of energy. It's like a, hey, I'm passing you on the track right now, but come with me, and that's infectious to me. And I've always at a young age, like in high school, I was lucky enough to have like an incredible coach that just we before me mentality. It's just all about like what we can accomplish together. It's like whenever you get interviewed, the first thing you talk about is team. It's never what you just did. It's always like, yeah, like to get I did this because my team. It's like the first thing you say, and I think when I was young and I had that instilled in my head so deeply, I think that just played such a big role in being like, this is the only way. I mean, there is no way in hell I would be able to get out the door every day and put in the work and do everything that I needed to do to get to the level of competition without my teammates, like not even close, like I think kind of going back to what I said before, like for me personally, it would be an empty experience if I didn't also have like the Tin Man Elite axes or and these this bigger thing that I could also represent than just like my name at the starting. Like if it just said Sam Parsons, it would be a lot more empty, for sure. And it'd be a lot harder to push.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I'm curious on like the sort of like technical precision side of like your training, because a lot of the stuff you guys share is like dirt roads and tracks, But I kind of follow more stuff in triathlon, and there's some guys that are just like doing insane next level testing and all this stuff. And I'm curious, like, do you guys do a lot of that? Not so much, or do you see other people in your space doing that? And how do you kind of like manage a balance there?
I think that like in the endurance community in general, like follows fads, in training, whether it's like long run tempos or, like hill sprints, or it's like, people kind of like follow these waves of like, oh, this is what people are doing. This is the way they're structuring their training. Like, like double threshold training is like the big buzzword right now that everyone is, starting to do like a morning and afternoon session that are both at this controlled threshold rhythm. And you get your lactic testing done to make sure that you're under, 3 moles and you're able, oops, sorry about that. Let me put my everything on silent here so that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, so it's like we have started to do lactic testing. So like I got so to answer your question, yes, we are starting to get a lot more technical with our training. I think I went to like the German Olympic Center. And I just nerded out with all the sports scientists there, and we got like my LT1, LT2, like we got all these zones tested to make sure that like I'm staying in these zones. And they gave us a tremendous amount of feedback on what they thought I was doing wrong with my training, what I was doing right with my training, what I should cut out. And it was, to me, it was like revelation after revelation. And whether it actually is making a huge difference or not, mentally, I feel like I'm doing a completely different training model now than what I did in the years past. And we've kind of adopted it in the saying of calling it clean training. That's what like the Germans call it. And it sounds funny because it sounds like you're not doping training, but to them, it means clean training means when you run threshold, stick to threshold. When you run VO2 max, actually run VO2 max. Like, don't do these workouts that are like start at threshold and then finish at VO2 max and then back to threshold, or like, mixing and matching. Like, that is dirty training, like our team calls it. And it's this just funny expression we call it now. In order to get your biggest bang for your buck on those days. And in order to not teach your body how to build lactate, there's all this stuff, and we could have literally a whole podcast on just explaining all their philosophies with clean training. And all the runner nerds or triathlon nerds would love it, but I'll leave it at that for now. I'm actually resting after like I do sprint, like strides. Like, I'm not just like jog resting, I'm walk resting or hill sprints. I'm actually like recovering and then sprinting so I can actually run fast, not like this huge, yeah, I could go on and on about it. But yes, we've started to do lactic testing. I think lactic testing is great in order to stay in the proper zones. and to do the proper threshold training. You know, I think like Jakob famously said, and I like tweeted, like, this guy's ridiculous for saying this. He like tweeted, like, Jakob didn't tweet. It was in like an interview where he said, like, yes, people are training like too hard nowadays. And I know what he meant, but I still trolled him for it because I'm like, this, there's no one in the world that trains harder than Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Like, he literally has, like, when he said that, like, tweet, the or when he said that in an interview, the week before, he said in an interview that he did 10 by 800 at sub 2 minute pace with like a minute rest. Like, it was some just workout that, like, any person hears, I don't care what level you're at, you're going to say, what the fuck? You know what I mean? It's like so out of this world. Kipchoge, Kilian Jornet, like Christian Blumenfeld. Like, it's like up in the Himalayas that you're just like, what? Like, that shouldn't be possible, you know?
Right.
But he didn't do it the way he wanted to execute it. So then he did it a day later. He took a day of rest and then did it a day later. I'm like, don't talk about people that are training too hard and then you do that, you know? But I know what he meant, that he meant like people are running like too hard threshold. Like, to make it
right, simple. They're training more dirty.
Hey, they're training dirty. Yeah.
Do you think at all he's like playing mind games?
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure. I definitely think that. Like, I think Josh Kerr has been doing a lot of that recently, also, where like he'll be saying these statements just about like how perfect and how smart he's been training and everything, and like that's mind games, you know, whether it's with yourself, is like telling yourself that.
Right.
But also like instilling that into your competitors to say like, hey, no one has done what, and he was a world champion, so he can say whatever the hell he wants, you know? And say, yeah, well, I'm the world champion, so I did do it better, you know? So, but yeah, mind games for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question, but.
No, definitely. No, that's funny. You mentioned rest a couple times, and I imagine like from the beginning of your first pro contract to now, at least like the endurance world as a marketplace, rest and recovery has become such a huge emphasis. And I'm curious, like, from your experience, has that evolved? And what are some of the sort of like rest and recovery practices now? And it sounds like you see a lot more value in that, importance in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, the single biggest thing you can do is, you know, like honing in your sleep. And that is one thing that, like, if you're going to be obsessed about your workout days, you better be equally as obsessed with how many hours of sleep you're putting in the day before, 2 days before, and the day after, because that's the only way you're actually going to soak in whatever you did on that workout day without injury or without feeling like feeling bad the next day. And it's crazy how I feel like I'm so keyed in off of getting in 10 hours of sleep. And, you know, to some people, 10 hours of sleep sounds like crazy. But it's like, if I'm not getting 10 hours like through the night, then I'm going to make sure I get in like 30 minutes to an hour, like, nap during the day, to make up for that. And the biggest thing for me has been, like, taking Pillar Performance. Like, it's like a magnesium supplement. And that's something where I feel like my legs are not as sore, you know, I'm feeling better off of it. I sleep better off of it. I can go to sleep quicker based off of it. And it's just one of those things where it's like, I've tried tons of different melatonins and things like that. And, you know, like, you can get all the massage guns and tools you want to feel better. But I think magnesium is your best bang for your buck. Like, I think if you saw any running specific doctor, they would probably tell you, you should probably be taking magnesium, vitamin D's through the winter. And Pillar Performance is just like the most complex, you know, different types of magnesium, all in one. So, I was lucky enough to start taking them on my own. And then they heard I started taking them and, came on board after. So it was just like one of those things that worked out that way. Like, in a way that you actually want a sponsorship to work out, you know, not just like a blind thing where it's like, we'll give you this much money if you start using this. And it's like, well, this product sucks, but I need the money type of thing. So I'm lucky to actually have an organic partnership with them, where like I'm actually religious about using their product. So, yeah. And so that's probably the biggest thing for like recovery, that I use currently. And also just like utilizing water. is the other thing. I think like Normatex and the boots and like things like that are they're fine, you know, but like you can get your legs into water, walking in a pool, aqua jogging, hot tub, you know, that compression of that water, I think is the single best, most therapeutic thing you can do for like your legs to feel better. Epsom salt bath, like that sort of thing for sure.
Simple stuff, but easy to overlook and spend all the money on the other things.
Yeah.
But
Much easier to spend money than just meditate for 10 minutes, right?
yeah, definitely. I've never really like explored doing this, but I think it'd be a funny editorial of like, professional like triathletes and runners, like so much of what they're doing and training is documented, but like it's rarely documented all the napping. Like I feel like that cohort must do a lot of napping.
Well, dude, it's crazy because so many there's so many like even recently I've had two marathon people that are going to the Olympic trial qualifiers for the marathon that reach out to me and basically have said like, "Hey, I'm running all these miles, like I'm feeling run down, like I'm tired, I'm restless, like do you actually buy into this pillar performance stuff? Like I'm thinking about trying it, you know?" And I told tell them the same thing I tell you. It's like, look, it's a game changer and it helps me. And therefore I'll recommend it to anybody. But at the end of the day, like you got to figure out what's right for you and how much sleep works for you. But it's crazy how some runners can be such bad sleepers and they do need to rely on sleeping even up to like 2 hours during the day. Like I know some world-class athletes that like can't sleep more than like 6 hours over the night because of the restlessness of all the like the work they're putting into their putting into it, that they just conk out during the day, which is just crazy to me to think about. But I also want to add for recovery, there's also like I'm also just like eating more. In terms of like, if I need a second dinner, I'm gonna eat that second dinner and not think twice about it, you know? And also fueling during workouts is something where like, when I first started running professionally or in college or anything, I didn't do any fueling like during workouts. Like, yeah, if I got hot, I would like, you know, do the water bottle on the face and like, you know, if I'm thirsty, I'm gonna drink water, you know? I'm pretty meticulous now about like, hey, I don't care if you feel like you need it or not. Like, I'm putting down my like precision gel, you know, or my Morton gel or whatever, you know, like I've actually started to like really not like Morton now that I've started taking the precision gel. Have you ever tried the precision stuff? I like
Not the
just
gel.
got my hands on stuff and it's like for me it's so much easier to get down. Yeah, I really enjoy that. So like getting in like 60 grams of carbs like during the workout and getting in caffeine during the workout and getting in how much sugars and how much carbs and protein like during the workout, because there's this mentality that the recovery starts the minute your workout is over. And I think that's the wrong mentality. I think the mentality is the minute you start working hard, you should also be starting your recovery. As crazy as that sounds, is like the minute you start working really hard, like how much can you mitigate how much you're going to be fatigued and after when you're done? I no longer feel like when I'm done a workout, I'm like, you know, like slumped over in a chair, like dead to the world, like driving home, hoping I make it back in time. Or it's like hoping this like little protein shake I have is going to be like enough. You know, it's like, no, like I'm fueled right when I'm done my workout because I've taken down 24 ounces of water and gels and all this stuff, you know? And I think that's been a huge game changer also for me.
Yeah,
So
no, that makes a lot of sense.
letter to my younger self definitely would have been fuel more during workouts.
How much, when you're tracking like fueling and eating and all that stuff, like you guys have partnered with Whoop, and so I imagine you're seeing a lot of data through that. Is that kind of what you use to track, like, okay, I need to eat like 4,000 calories today, or that sort of thing, or do you get like super specific?
I don't. I know that there's like I know there's a few guys on our team that can get kind of crazy with it. Not gonna call them out, but yeah, we actually just use Coros for everything now. So like Coros has HRV and like it has our sleep tracking and everything. So yeah, I see everything like through the Coros app now. And it's kind of like I don't know. Whoop is great. It's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I can now have my watch and I don't have to wear two things on my wrist. As simple as that is, like that's great. But it was funny. We our Whoop partnership like ended in, when was it? I think it was like 2021, and it like ended, and we were very confused. We were like, why are you dropping us? Like we were prof, like we literally made money for you guys, like, which is, I think, a rarity for a lot of sponsors in the space, where it's like whatever you're getting paid, like to make it up in your codes or whatever, like I think is a rarity in the world. And they were like, yeah, you guys were like the only people that really made money for us in the running space. So we just pulled all our funding out of the running space and into golf and CrossFit stuff. So I was like, well, that really sucks that we got dragged down with other people. But no love lost there. Happens. But tracking through Coros, like tracking your sleep and HRV and things like that, I think are really important. And then with like the caloric intake stuff, I really think it is just about, and I try to be as sensitive as possible in this topic, because it's something that I've seen firsthand, like can be such a huge struggle for people, like to like figure out what is the right nutrition like for you and like what's healthy and what's not. It can be a vicious process. I personally, in my personal experience, have always erred on the side of more is better. Like if you can be overfueled, that's better than being underfueled. Like I'm constantly trying to get in as much sugars, whether it's with like maple syrup on waffles and Greek yogurts and fruits, as possible in order to keep my energy levels up, and just, constantly just getting in as much carbs as I possibly can in order to run the miles that I'm doing, and to have the energy to actually get out the door in the afternoons. It's like I have to eat lunch. I don't have the luxury to skip a meal, or else I wouldn't be able to get out the door. And I will say, and like I hate that I'm admitting this, just because like I'm not sponsored by them or anything, but like, have you ever tried ketones?
I just started trying it actually, like this week.
Yeah, okay. So like I've been taking ketones like in the afternoons, purely just because it gets me out the door that little bit easier. Like I'm not taking it for like the ketosis benefits or anything like that. Like I am leaner than I expected to be at this point in my training regimen. So like maybe a little shout out to ketones, but it gets me out the door. And I tell you what, I'm not a huge caffeine drinker, but I feel good when I take those. So
So you're using it more as like a caffeine replacement
I'd say
than for
so.
like the training.
I'd say so. Like at 2 p.m. or like 3:30, when all of a sudden I'm like been on my laptop doing Tin Man like work, or like doing whatever I had to do that day, like playing online Catan or watching Netflix or whatever. Like I'll like it's easy to get groggy, even after doing like 10 miles or whatever it was that morning. I do like to eat some food, rip a ketone, and all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, I want to go work out. And I hate to like, because I could very easily be like the biggest ketone hater, and be like, this is total like BS or whatever, but it helps.
Well, fair enough.
Maybe I just need, I don't know. Figure it was worth sharing.
It's an interesting one. I'm
Have
curious to see.
you felt anything from it or not much?
I've only taken it a couple times, but I do feel like it worked in some way. It wasn't like something super acute, but it was like, oh, actually, I'm not as tired as I thought I would have been doing that same run, or I'm feeling a bit more energized. Middle afternoon kind of thing. Like, it's not like I drink it and then it's like, bam, like something like explodes and I'm like Superman. But it's like, oh yeah, there's, that was a smooth, just like clear few hours or whatever afterwards.
I don't know. There's just that little bit of like extra like drive I feel like I have. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if I was a like maybe I could take an espresso shot and it'd be the exact same thing, but I just don't take
Yeah.
much caffeine, so
Yeah. It's not
wouldn't be.
helpful for sleep. I wonder like how ketones affect sleep versus caffeine affecting
So
sleep.
that's kind of why I started gravitating towards it, because I didn't want to start taking like a Morton caffeine gel or something, you know, that late in the day, just because I'm like if I even take like 20 milligrams of caffeine, like that's gonna drive me up a wall,
Yeah.
like 3 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Ketones, I was able to still crash easily after them when needed.
Yeah, well, let's switch gears, kind of go over to the brand team, Tin Man Elite. You know, developing this brand, you know, it's you guys have done a number of pretty cool collaborations and projects. You know, I think I remember listening to a podcast with you earlier that you mentioned maybe you like interned with Adidas or something, and then, you know, kind of come back, and you guys obviously have a pretty big partnership with them. So I'm just curious, like, was that always part of your vision, important to you? I guess like to be that invested in the team in a way, and also to have like a creative outlet aside from the running.
Yeah, it was funny. I was just talking about like when I was like a younger kid, I like did like graffiti, and I was like telling them about like what I used to like do on like the stop sign, like graffiti with like ink pens and stuff like that. So like that was like some of my first like creative outlet, as a young little piece of shit. Yeah, I felt like I always needed to do something more than just running. Like I never wanted my running career to amount to just my times on a piece of paper, or like what are my PBs, you know? Like I never wanted to be like, oh, Sam is a 13:12, 354 miler, and that'd be like what people would like think about me or remember me for. Like I always felt like there was more out there that I could do. And I feel like I also needed that in order to like stay sane, and in order to kind of like going back to what I was talking about before, in order to have like a purpose when you're on that starting line, and early on, especially when we were like first starting like Tin Man Elite and like building our brand identity and our logo and our ethos and just everything we wanted to like convey and the vulnerability we wanted to create in the space. Of really showcasing what we're doing, the highs and lows on YouTube, and you know, pushing the sport forward in that light was so important to us. And just trying to make running cool, you know, like it can be really nerdy, and you know what I mean? And like I think that like for me, like that's kind of the, like I remember a lot of those early conversations when we were building the brand, like with myself and Reed and Drew, in our basement all together. Like we would talk about like, man, like there was like a few pro runners like when we were high school kids that we were like, oh, that guy's cool, you know, but there wasn't like a team that we could really latch on to and identify with the same way you could with like an NFL team or NBA team. It's like, yeah, they have millions of dollars, you know, and they can dress really cool like all the time. So that's easy. Sorry, one second. Sleep mode here. Need to go on maybe do not disturb. All right. Yeah, so that brand building was so important, to have that outlet outside of just the running and outside of the times. And it's like maybe you could write it off for like a little bit of like wanting to leave like a bigger legacy than just, you know, like the sorry. I don't know what I have to do. I literally have do not disturb on my laptop and on my phone.
Yeah, that
Sorry.
stuff always confuses me too. So no worries.
All right. Yeah, but having that outlet, like meant everything like to us to like have something that we could pursue outside of just ourselves, and it became like this very egotistical endeavor of like you're an Olympian, you're a sub four, you're doing this, you're a like Iron Man, it's like it's a very selfish, egotistical like endeavor is like the pursuit of embetterment of yourself, like just get those trophies and medals, and like hopefully there's some very beautiful like holistic things that you're learning about yourself like along the way. But there can also be a lot of like narcissism that can
Sure.
come with that, with the accolades and the praise and followers or whatever, and to do something that also can maybe inspire and be aspirational and to help other people along the way through our own journeys, I think is been the most rewarding thing. And I was t we just had a big team retreat up in Nederland with all our new athletes. Like we have five new runners, and I told them, like, look, there's nothing that I've experienced in my career that is more fulfilling when I go to a race and I see whether it's a 65-year-old running their first marathon or it's a 14-year-old wearing a Tin Man hoodie, and they're like, yo, let's go. You know what I mean? And they're like pumped up the same way someone would be going to a Lakers game, and they, see LeBron James and they're wearing their jersey because they feel connected to him, because they want to be a part of something. They want to be a part of a community. And I felt like the professional running world didn't have that. They didn't have like real professional teams that, you knew enough about them to latch on to and to feel like you're a part of it in some way. And I feel like social media was really starting to really take off past just like the Facebooks and YouTubes, with like Instagram really becoming this platform where you could share consistent training. Like the amount of information out there now is insane. And it's like when I look back at when we first started posting, like in 2018, and just posting videos of in a car or a bike next to us, you know what I mean? Like that wasn't happening. You know what I mean? Like you didn't see that. You know what I mean? Like no one was doing that. You would see like the one documentary, of one person or runner, and it'd be like, this is so cool. And you'd latch on to that. And those were the experiences I had growing up, was like these little moments of like a flow track series, or like, I don't know, these little tidbits of things of that you'd get from people. Or you actually had to go somewhere. Like I remember going to like New York to like watch some professionals race, and I got to watch Evan Yeager like race in person. And I was like, man, like I want to wear a headband and I want to grow my hair out. Like I want to have that swagger. Like I want to do that. I want to be like him. So like having that in mind and like having those things are always, like those pillars of Tin Man Elite, with like the community side, the social media side and the performance side. Like those are our three big pillars that like we're constantly like, how do we make these pillars, wider and stronger and taller, in order to push the sport forward. So I would have not had any purpose in running if I just was chasing accolades. If it was if I didn't have like a collection that I needed to be sure I nailed in order to, have enough travel budget for our team, because we really do live like paycheck to paycheck. We have amazing sponsors, and like maybe in the outside looking in, it can look like glamorous because we have, some shiny new jackets, every season or something, like getting shipped in or designed for us. But it's still like a hustle, like we're still shipping out product on our own, like the pro athletes, we do it, we meet together and we're putting them, we're writing the letters, like we're still trying to work on our margins as best we can, like we're still trying to make sure we forecast things in a way that can be exciting for our consumers, that if they get it, it really feels like it's something special and not something that they could just get whenever they wanted to. It's like, if you want the Tin Man Elite singlet, like you either get it in this drop or it's gone, and we want to keep that excitement and exclusivity while also balancing the inexclusivity of being able to actually get it, and it's constantly finding that middle ground of like, well, we don't want this crazy overhead because we can't afford it. Like if we order 500 or 200 or 100 too many, that could really hurt us. So like it's easy for us to live in this hype culture world of like, let's just do a run of like 150, you know, let's just do a run of 200, you know, or whatever, in order to know that, okay, we know we'll sell out of that, you know. So that stuff is exciting to me, and I love working in that world. It like it's a challenge, and I think that like one of my favorite like quotes from anything is that like anything worth doing is, you know, like hard and stressful, and you know, like is gonna like drive you to your wit's end. And like I take everything that I make very personal, and it's like why I'm successful, and it's why I can get to these really low moments, you know, is because like every little print that I decide to put on a jacket or a hoodie or embroidery, if it tanks, and I've had plenty of products that haven't done well, I take it personally, you know, and it sucks because you want to dissociate and just be proud of the work that you did. You know what I mean? It's like I'm sure you've had moments, everyone's experienced it, where you put work into something and you don't get the results that you expected. But you should still be proud of it because it is good, you know? It's like, I know this was a good collection, you know? Even though people didn't buy it and consume it for whatever reason, maybe the storytelling wasn't quite there, or was off base, or the pictures weren't as pretty as I thought they were. It's like, whatever it may be, like, I try my best to disassociate with my work and just be proud of it. That's taken me a long time to get there, certainly. So. It's a challenge. I love it. I try to make it cool, and that's kind of the motivating factor, is like, can I keep making cool stuff? To if there's a kid or a first time marathoner or whoever, you know what I mean, that all of a sudden is that little bit more excited to get out the door that day, or they're about to run a track workout and they feel that little bit of swagger because they have some axes on their hat, or you know, a tree logo on their back, and they just kind of like feel like they're a part of Tin Man Elite in whatever capacity, like that's the most fulfilling, you know. That's the coolest thing ever for me, you know, and that's what drives me to keep doing it, you know.
No, I agree. I mean, I used to have a magazine and we would make products as well. And then I worked with Stüssy for a long time and a few other brands, but I would always be so hyped just to like see it. I would always be like, oh, there it is in the wild. Like see it, like be out in the world and be like, nice, there's like somebody over there just like wearing it, you know? And like
Totally.
hopefully they're having that like felt experience of like being
Right.
hyped. And yeah, it's just cool because I know I've had that experience with certain products where I'm like, oh man, I want to go run more because I got these shoes, or I want to go do whatever. And it's like that's the power of, you know, what is a product, but there's more, you know, that's gone into it, but can totally like, you know, shift somebody's perspective and life choices and stuff. It's not a small thing. And yeah, I think you guys are
I
definitely
gotta
doing that.
tell you. I gotta tell you this quick story. There was a kid, we got an email from a kid. It was his first day of college. And he wore a Tin Man hoodie. Whether it was subconscious or not, you know, gave him that little bit of confidence. And he was typing this all out in the email. And he said that he was like walk on campus, school like hours away from where he's from, new state. Didn't know anyone. And then he was walking through like the main courtyard, and someone just yelled across like the courtyard. He was like, "Let's go, Tin Man." And like he was like, yeah, like he like did our like hammer axe, like, you know, like thing that we throw up when we like win races, and maybe before a race we'll do this. And he said later, like he said weeks later, that same person came up to him because he was still wearing the hoodie. Came up to him in the dining hall and be like, "Yo, that was me who like yelled at you. Like I love watching those guys like YouTube channel." And they became friends, and that was his first friend in college. And like, man, like talk about like that right there will make me cry. You know what I mean? Like, that right there is like getting someone to have a friend or a connection because of some little thing that you touched at one point of time. Gosh, like
Yeah, it's
everything
cool.
is worth it. Every little bit of stress and every little like timeline or pushback or factories that messed up and you ordered some jacket that looked like shit, you know, like all that is worth it all of a sudden, you know, when you get an email like that.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm sure that's happened many times that you guys haven't heard about, but I also resonate with the process of making something, you know, and you're trying your best and it's like the print is wrong or the fabric is weird and it's like you got to put it out and just like, you know, nobody else knows and you're just like, oh, what the hell?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's been so many times, and like we get like a kick out of it sometimes, where it's like, from our point of view, I'll be like, no, I'm not putting this out, you know what I mean? But then we'll be like, we have to, you know what I mean? No choice. And then it does well, and sometimes it does bad, and it's like, whoa, like, didn't expect people to, you know. Obviously, when you're so close to something, it, you know, you can end up hating it, you know. So I think that's something really common, is with like any, like, I wouldn't consider myself an artist to the point where, you know, I'm making something like beautiful, you know. But I'm sure there's so many artists out there that would say, like, you know, whoever made the Mona Lisa, you know, like, whatever, like, they probably hated it and probably thought that it like looked really bad. Or like photographers, if they look at their work and edit it enough, you know, they can start to hate it. And like, I know, like, our videographer, whenever he's making a video, he's like, oh, this is so bad, this is so bad. And it's like, dude, you've watched it 100 times, and you've, you know, it's like, that's why you think it's so bad. You know, it's like, I just watched this, and this is I'm ready to run through a brick wall, you know. But because you've heard this same tune 100 times, you're like, dude, this sucks, you know?
I know it is a funny process. And it's like at that point, it's not for you anymore, you know, and you just really do have to like let go of it, but it can be hard sometimes. So I'm curious, you know, all the products that you've made and, you know, getting to do some of your own shoes and stuff as well. Like, is there anything that you're like, man, I can't believe I got to like make this or one thing that came out like better than you expected? And it's just like really been like, man, when I was running and high school or college, like you could probably imagine, like, okay, I'm gonna run a mile this fast. Maybe I'll like shoot at that, but like, am I gonna ever get to make this thing and have that experience? That must have been like outside of your frame of reference almost.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's a few for sure. I would say, like, there's one hoodie we've done. Like, it's this like beautiful, like, bleach dyed hoodie. And it's like how I ended up like dating my current girlfriend. So like that's definitely the most special one, is because like she was in town, and I knew she was like an artist, and I like asked her if she could like do this specific type of like bleaching, this like in this way and everything. So that was kind of my in to start talking to her.
Nice.
So that product holds obviously a very, very special place in my heart, now dating for like 3 years now. So but yeah, I mean, the shoes were huge, you know, because like, I'll never forget like getting my first pair of, I hate to say it, Nike shoes. Like, when I was, you know, like 13, like, there's like these ugly lunar shoes, you know? And I remember opening up that box and just being like so empowered to like put them on. And just, I literally, it was Christmas, and like, I literally got that box, and it was like, Christmas is over. It was over. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't care who else was opening up presents or what else I maybe had under the tree. It was like, that was it, you know? And I put those shoes on at my aunt and uncle's house, and they had this like huge steep hill. I just started sprinting up the hill. So, you know, it
That's
was like,
amazing.
you know, and like, that was such empowerment, you know, that those shoes gave me, you know. So to be able to do those shoes with Adidas, you know, and to like, same thing, you know, it was like getting to see people rate deciding to like race in them, you know, and like, do like, that was their marathon race shoe, or, you know, like, that was like what they decided to like train in, you know, like, that is incredibly fulfilling. And it is one of those things where it's like, I went from being a tennis intern, you know, in college, to getting to like collaborate with Adidas on a shoe. It's just like, that does not happen, you know what I mean? Like, even getting to have my foot in the door at Adidas, just to, you know, to weasel my way into a tennis internship when I knew fuck all about tennis, like, was an amazing opportunity, you know. So yeah, for sure, the shoes were big, you know. Like, I mean, I've looked up to, you know, Max and Tom at District Vision for so long, and they were the first people that when like I got back from Europe after quitting running after college, like I loved District Vision and everything that they did and with their brand. And it was one of those brands that I was like, this is like cool without trying too hard, like in the running space. And I was like, this is the stuff running needs, it's like like skate culture, like with Stussy and all these amazing brands. Like it's cool, like everything is fucking cool about it, you know what I mean? It's like, why can't running be cool? Like, why does running doesn't have to be this like tucked in shorty shorts? Like, it can look cool, if you make it, what it is. And I got to like meet with them in New York, and they came and they showed me their little like, this tiny little workspace they had like nook and cranny in New York. And they just opened their arms to me just being this wide-eyed kid, and then to then go from being this like, young kid, wide-eyed, just like same thing. Like, I remember they gave me like one pair of like the Nagata Speed Blades when I was there, and I did not take those fucking things off for 2 years. You know what I mean? And like, I did not take those off for any training runs in Colorado. And to me, it was like getting a pair of like Japanese made glasses.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it was like, this is the coolest thing ever, directly from the people that made them, and then to get to then work with them on a project, make my own Nagata Speed Blades, was the coolest thing ever. So there's a lot of those things. And there's definitely a lot of things that like, I wish I could do more of, like with people out there. I love Adidas and I love working with them, but with any sponsor, there's limitations to what you can and cannot do. So it'll be interesting to see where Tin Man Elite goes, like in the years to come. Like, our contract with Adidas is up after this year. I don't know what will happen in terms of, will they re-sign us? Will we sign with a new brand? I would love to re-sign with Adidas. I would love to sign with a new brand, like whatever is there, whatever can make Tin Man Elite to keep living past me, in my own career. Like, that's the ultimate goal. But the brand guy in me definitely would love to be able to get to work with whatever brand I was excited about and like do these little collaborations and things like as they came and went. Like, that's certainly a space I would love to live in, but gotta pay the bills, and you gotta make sure everyone can get massages and travel and do these little things that make a difference in the running world. So
I definitely, I get what you mean about people looking at what you're doing and it maybe seems glamorous, but I definitely also look at it from my experience as like, and knowing about just like, sports in this way, it's like, man, you guys are, I can just imagine you're working hard. The brand, even just like negotiating those contracts and stuff is like huge.
Our current team Adidas deal in 2019 when I was 24 years old, and that was the only thing we ever dreamed of, was getting a deal in front of us. And I remember saying, like, I remember being, and like, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to say all this stuff, but I remember saying in these negotiations, like, I was like, hey, like, I want like 2 years. I only wanted it to be like a 2-year deal because I knew we were going to outgrow that deal. Like, I knew the brand power that we were going to hold. I knew that deep in my heart, passion wise, I was going to work my ass off to get our sales up to this point, and I was going to keep growing it, and we were going to keep recruiting great people, and running faster and things. And like, I knew we were going to outgrow this deal. And like, it was very easy for Adidas to then like steamroll me and just be like, all right, no deal then,
it's right.
Like, it's either this like 6-year deal or nothing, and it's like, they hold all the cards, it's not like I can be like, no, like, and it's like, of course I was able to still be like, okay, well, if you can't do that, then I want this, or, like, I'm still able to be like savvy and, like get a ton of product added into the contract in order for us to then sell that product, because I knew that's maybe where the real like power could come from, is like, if I can turn around this product the way that I thought maybe we could, But it's still something where I'm like,
Yeah.
gosh, like if I could go back and do that again, like come on, you know?
Yeah.
But that's just life and learning and
Yeah,
figuring things out as you go.
totally. Well, that's cool though. I mean, yeah, I can imagine that whole process and the evolution and having to bet on yourself and, you guys are tiny compared to Adidas and going to that table would be interesting.
I'll tell you this. I spent when we were pitching Adidas, and so I knew some people at like the headquarters in Portland, and I just run a race in Portland, and I spent my teammates in the car. We spent 6 hours there waiting to have a meeting. We literally showed up. We did our run in the morning, and we showed up at like 10, at Adidas headquarters, and I'm just going around saying hi to my old colleagues. But I got my laptop and I got my presentation. I got my Tin Man Elite, presentation ready and queued up. And I'm walking through the running BU with all my like old colleagues. Because with tennis internship, I would do the tennis internship and then I'd just finish my work at lunch by lunch and then just go down to the running BU and annoy the designers and the marketing people and be like, oh, what are you working on? What are you working on? What are you working on? And I was just the annoying intern that annoyed everyone and wanted to help with whatever little thing I could, which I couldn't actually help because I didn't know anything, but I was just a sponge to it. And I would just get people to be like, hey, like is Jennifer here? And like Jennifer at the time, or she still is, like runs Adidas like sports marketing, like she's the big boss. And they're like, hey, like, is she here? And like, just like one by one, I got like people to kind of be like, hey, like Jennifer, like, did you know like Sam is here today? Like, I think he might like, do you want to like maybe like talk to him? Like, I think he really liked to like talk to you, and I eventually had another person from the Adidas Sports Market be like, hey, Sam, like, we're good to have like a quick meeting today. And I went in. Oh, I'm probably gonna get a text from Jennifer about this story, but, I get there, I load up the presentation, like I'm like, all right, I got this, just be confident, like speak from the heart, I come down and she sits down and first thing that she says is she's like, Sam, I want to let you know right now, I never take meetings unless I know exactly what that meeting is about. And I don't know what the hell you're about to tell me or say to me or pitch to me right now, but this is the last time this is ever happening. And I was like, yeah, like just absolute tail between my legs, did the pitch, and then it took another like six pitches, over the span of like 3 months. But that was the cat. That was the first
That's so
catalyst.
funny. Yeah,
was
that's awesome.
that. So, but it was very funny to come back to the car at like end of the workday, like 4 p.m. And Drew and Reed and the guys who had also just raced the day before sitting in the car, they're like, dude, did you get it? And I was like, no, but I think it went well.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, I guess since you've been working with Adidas, like they have made a lot better shoes in the last couple of years. Do you guys get any sort of hard-in testing new stuff, developing notes, or anything like that kind of thing?
Not as much as I would like to be perfectly honest. Like they do most of their testing in Germany. And that's just kind of like their like closed loop system that they have, it seems like, where it's like they like, get the sample shoes. I have been able to go several times after races, and I've gone to campus and I've gotten to, get a hold of like the spikes 2 years in advance and like things like that. And that is where I feel like I've been able to give them the most tangible feedback. And I think because I've worked on shoes and obviously like I'm putting in hundreds and hundreds of miles in them, like I am not afraid to give them bad, critique. You know what I mean? It's like I'm just an athlete here. It's like I'm not like the assistant product developer or something that is trying to tell his boss, like, dude, this shoe you designed sucks. You know what I mean? Or something, like I can give them honest feedback. So the times where I have been in there, like, I feel like I've been able to give like very good on what I think is good honest feedback, in order to make the advances, because there have been shoes that I've like hated that they've made. There's been shoes that they've like changed that I used to love, and I've been pissed at them for changing. So like I can give that feedback in order for them to like continuing to like push their footwear forward and everything. And it is crazy how like, I mean, all footwear has just like the technology and everything has obviously like exploded. You know, the stuff that I was racing and training in when I was in college, you know, with I was at an Adidas college also. And I remember when they first came out with like the Boost foam technology, everyone in the locker room, we were all like, like cavemen, as if we had just discovered like fire. We were like, yes, yes. And it was this tiny little strip of like Boost foam, as if this was gonna like, we were gonna nail our 8 mile tempo. You know what I mean? It's like, and now I wouldn't dream of running in that shoe, you know, like for the same tempo runs I'm doing now with like six layers of foam technology, you know, in it. And I do think Adidas has like the best like marathon racing shoes. Like I mean, like obviously like the Nike stuff speaks for itself, but I think that the Adidas stuff, whenever I have, you know, ran in the Nikes and stuff, I just have never felt the same experience as I have. And maybe that's just with how much I've ran in them, but I love the Adidas Super, like this, like the foam and everything.
I mean, I've always been like a lifelong like Nike brand loyalist, and then I've also done some stuff with On in the last year.
Nice.
But the like Adios Pro 3 is probably the best running shoe I've ever worn. I just like can't.
That's what I'm referring to. You know, it's like just like for an overall workout, like spring, you know, muscle recovery, like everything. It's just
Yeah,
good.
it's good. Yeah, well, I guess, looking forward, wrapping it up, like what does this next year like look like for you? Paris and that stuff and
Just a lot of stress. No, it's something that, and I, you know, after everything that like we've talked about, I do think that I really want to be able to finish this year, whether I made an Olympic team or I didn't, or I ran my personal best or I did not, or I fell on my face again, metaphorically or figuratively, is to like look back at this year and be like, that was a great year. You know, like I had fun, I enjoyed myself, I pushed myself, you know, like I grew as a person and as an athlete. Like I want to be able to so desperately get back to really finding the enjoyment in the process and in those small moments, and like not taking stuff for granted and all that shit, that like all those virtues that like you want to have. I'm like really trying to actually hone in and not just say on a podcast. So like that's something where you know, I'm like manifesting it now by saying it. Is like, man, I hope I can look back at this year and be like, that was great. You know, like that was great. Whether I spent that whole year on a bike injured, you know, or whatever it may be, you know. I
You never
really
know.
hope I can find like the fun and enjoyment, because my years are quite numbered now in the sport. Like, I am planning to like retire pretty soon, from the sport of running, and I do feel like it is time for me to like work in the workplace and, you know, like start my like act like start an actual career. So you cannot run forever. So that is stuff I acknowledge more and I think about more, but I also really want to continue to live in the moment and to like be present and to really enjoy the fact that I can move my body the way I can right now. And I never want to be able to like have to look back at these final years of my career and be like, man, you are so lost in your own sauce of just trying to be the best that you lost, you know, your own self in the process. And I did do that last year for like full on, you know, like getting to Budapest for the World Championships was like the most toxic experience, you know, for myself. And I never want to get to that place again. And if I do that again this year, like I've said already so many times, like Paris will be the most empty. I'll be the most empty Olympian ever if I do that again. to just be so hyper focused and not being able to take the blinders off.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the big thing for this year. No holds bar. It's what I was telling you before. Like I'm totally in to invest in myself in any way that I need to, in order to make that team. And I like heard another athlete talking about this recently, but like I want to be, and this goes along with what I was saying before. It's like I want to be the athlete that deserves to be there, whether I'm there or not. Like I want
Right.
to put myself in the position to work hard enough to do everything enough in order to be there. And I think that is in turn the most important thing at the end of the day. So I think that right now I feel like the more that I can sleep peacefully at night, knowing that I'm enjoying it,
Yeah.
that's so much more important than just having that title, because I have enough, I have other titles that I thought were going to mean everything to me. And I know Olympian will be just as meaningless to me once I want to start triathlons, or once I want to start, or once I want, whatever it
Yeah.
is, you know what I mean? Or once I start working and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to, do
Yeah.
this, or whatever it is,
Just move the goalposts.
yeah, exactly. That's
Yeah.
right. So that's my very long-winded answer to
Yeah,
that.
no, I think that's great. I mean, it's so good to have that awareness, and sometimes you have to have a year like you had last year to have that clarity now. You know, it's like I'm sure it was really challenging, but you know, seeing the gift of that to bring the clarity now and make those adjustments. And yeah, I wish you the best of luck and just enjoying every run and every day.
Cheers, brother. Appreciate the
Yeah.
conversation so much. Thank you for allowing me to, bring all that stuff to light. I needed to say it out loud too,
Yeah, I appreciate it. I definitely
It's
see the
easier to,
courage in that.
yeah. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, it was great to connect, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, until next time.
Thank you.